I'm Doug Wells.
Hi, I'm Roger Goldman. Welcome to Mountain Money.
On the phone with us now is Craig Primo. He's going to talk to us about Utah's M&A first quarter activity. Craig is the managing director at Keystone Capital Markets. He's got over 20 years of experience advising business owners in mergers, acquisitions, and capital raising transactions. In fact, he's completed more than 50 transactions, including sell-side M&A, buy-side projects, and capital raise transactions. And most importantly for our conversation this morning, he and his team here in Utah compile a quarterly list of M&A transactions that have happened in Utah. Craig, thank you for joining us on Mountain Money.
Morning, Doug.
So give us an overview. First, some of our audience may not be familiar when we use the term mergers and acquisitions. What do we mean on that, and what's the environment for mergers and acquisitions this first quarter?
Merger and acquisition is the colloquial term for the trading of businesses, mostly privately held businesses. And I'd say 95% of those are acquisitions, one company acquiring another company. It's much more rare to see a merger, which is more typically companies that are of their equals and peers, and they merge to become one. So probably 95% of what we've done, I've only done one merger my entire career, so most of what we do are the brokerage of one company acquiring another. To answer your question about what the market has been like and is currently in Utah, it's just as you would probably expect. These are good times for what we do. It's a very strong market right now, just as all the capital markets are.
Why is that, Craig? Why do you think that the market is strong right now? It's, you know, when we think about sort of the underlying economy, there are reasons why we're seeing a post-COVID rebound. But why does that also drive merger activity or acquisition activity?
Well, you know, it's part of a 20-year trend that I've seen in my career. One is you've got baby boomers who are retiring. When I first started at Citigroup years ago, my boss told me the next 20 years are going to be good times because you've got 10,000 baby boomers retiring every single day. Many of those baby boomers are business owners and they will sell their businesses. You've also seen a rise over that same period of time in private equity. These are companies that able to pool money from wealthy individuals and use that money for the purchase of businesses and take it from kind of a level of maybe $10 million in revenue to $50 million in revenue, employing financial engineering and kind of upgraded operating processes. You've also seen falling interest rates and declining underwriting criteria for the financing of these businesses. So there are probably other factors too. More recently, there are issues with respect to the fear of increasing tax rates. So it's like something out of Jaws. There is just so much activity, so much interest in these businesses that is driving the values up and the transaction volume up.
It's kind of the perfect storm, right? Interest rates are low. Aging founders came face-to-face with their mortality over the last 2 years, whether they got sick or not. It's, you know, all of us have the same final destination, and it's probably healthy to be reminded of that occasionally. And then on top of that, it's just... there's just so much capital outside of the debt markets. So your report, Craig, which you've been kind enough, you and I have been friends personally for many years and professionally, colleagues in different industries, but information that's of value to both of us. And you're kind enough to share your quarterly report with me. It shows in January there were 11 deals done. In February there were 7 deals done. March that there were 9 deals done. I find it interesting to look through the list and just kind of think about the story behind the headline, if you will. And one that caught my attention in this quarter's report was Morris Murdoch Travels' buyout of a travel agency that specialized in cruise industries. So I think we can all, cruise vacations, I think we can all imagine that it was an opportunistic acquisition for Morris Murdoch. As you look at your list from the last quarter, from the last several quarters, what's an interesting story of an acquisition to share with our audience?
Well, let's start with the volume we had last year. There were 60 transactions in Utah. We do our best to try to put together the list of deals that have occurred. We might have missed one or two. We use multiple sources. But there was a huge drop off, as you would expect, in Q2, and that rebounded. And we're on pace and actually increasing velocity now for that same volume this year. Of those deals, we probably close 5 to 10% of them. So I can only talk about our own individual deals. One company that is fairly well known in town is a company called Black Rifle Coffee Company. That was a deal that we transacted in 2017, and a company looking for capital to take it to the next level, and we did a recap with Sterling Partners. That's a company who would probably, without that transaction, would still be bumping around in the lower middle market, but now they are a national player, and they could be the next unicorn in Utah. That's probably a bit generous because it's consumer products and they don't normally get that big, but certainly a high flyer in this market and a national player.
One of the things that struck me on your list was the presence of the significant number of healthcare companies. That still seems to be a core sort of industry where we're seeing consolidation. Talk a little bit about what you see going on there.
Well, that is a perennial favorite in mergers and acquisitions, healthcare companies. And there are, I wouldn't say that we have an outsized number of healthcare companies, but I'm sure if you look at every metro area, you would see strong trends in healthcare, driven obviously by the takeover, it seems, of our economy. What is it now? It's used to be 1/7, 1/6, 1/5. It's getting larger and larger as a percentage of our GDP, and so you see more and more of those transactions. And oftentimes, too, you see these giant corporations who have national sales forces who are just too big to innovate. And what they do is they set their sights on smaller companies for products or services, and it's just so much easier for them, instead of having to innovate, which is almost impossible for a big company to do, to just purchase in the market. And then that enables these companies to have access to national sales forces and strong national processes. So I think you see that quite often.
Craig, you moved here about 15 years ago from Southern California. It was both a lifestyle decision, but your business life is important to you, obviously, as well. What was it that you saw here in Utah that said, you know, I can have a better quality of life, but really for this question, it's what did you see in the business environment to say, I see an opportunity here? Obviously, Southern California, there's a lot of fast, strong growing companies. Utah now has that as well. 15 years ago, not as much. What were you seeing back then that said, I can be successful from a business standpoint here in Utah?
What a good question. When we made the decision to move, it was closer to about 11 or 12 years ago. So it was just at the beginning of the Great Recession. So it was a good time for us to move. But we saw Utah, or I saw Utah, as an underbanked market. It was a maturing market, but one that just didn't have somebody in this market that had the skill sets that, that I did and that we could bring to bear here. I also saw this as an up market relative to California. Obviously, the volume of deals in Southern California, much greater. The size of the deals, much greater. However, per capita, there were going to be more transactions happening here. As a matter of fact, we track the number of unicorns. Unicorn is a privately held company with a valuation of greater than $1 billion. And there's usually five or six unicorns in Utah, which is, as a percentage of the population, greater, the number one market for unicorns relative to the population, even greater than California, which is a stunning statistic. So not that I could foresee that 12 years ago, but I could tell this was an underbanked market relative to California and a market on its way up relative to California. And so that's the decision. That was the calculus that that we used to make the decision.
Well, I'm glad your forecast turned out to be correct. We all benefit from the companies that we see here. One of the challenges that owners have is oftentimes they wait too long to bring in a professional like yourself. When it's time, if somebody is thinking, gee, I want to sell my company in the next 3 years, when should they reach out to an advisor and what types of things should they be doing once the advisor's engaged?
Well, you know, most people think in terms of what they know. You only sell a business once, maybe twice in your entire life, and that's rarefied air even for the people that that can sell a business, which is the 1%. So, but most people think of it in terms of, well, when I sell my house, I can just put things together, clean it up a little bit, and get it on the market in 30 days. And they often apply that same analogy to their business. That's a mistake. It takes decades, sometimes a generation, to build a business. It takes years to properly get out. So I would say that you're probably 2 years is the minimum that you want to assemble a team before a sale, because there are things that happen that already foreclose on your opportunity to optimize the sale of the business. For instance, you're going to want to clean up your balance sheet, skinny down your inventory, and stretch out your payables as you're being stretched out with your receivables. On the same token, try to collect your receivables. Do things that make that balance sheet smaller and smaller, because that's the balance sheet you have to tender at closing. That takes years to do that properly. And then usually at the sale point of the sale, there's a 12-month look back. And so, you know, you need to prepare years in advance to do this, maybe establish employment agreements with people, a buy-sell agreement with your partner. Even if you don't do all those things, it's smart to get your team together such that these people can get inculcated in your deal and totally marinate your company and the flow of documents so that their understanding of the business is richer. So I would say think in terms of 10 times as long as it takes to sell your business, or the time it takes to get prepared, to sell your house is the amount of time that it takes to get prepared to properly sell your business.
And talk about the role that a company like yours plays in that process. What do you bring to the table, Craig?
Well, you know, quite often most of the time we source the buyer, right? I mean, so oftentimes, most of the time, our clients don't know who the buyer is. They don't have a buyer at the table, or if they do, they don't know if that buyer is the right buyer for them. If that buyer is bringing the right amount of money to the table to transact, or whether the forms of consideration are appropriate for that seller. They don't know if it's the right cultural fit. So we source the buyer, but more than that, we get the business ready in the form of writing materials, building a data room, helping cleaning up the accounting, identifying problems with legal. You only have one chance to make a first impression, and you want to make your mistakes with the broker and identify problems with the broker ahead of time, not when you're in the market. And so that's what a good investment banker brings to the table. The size deals we work on are over $10 million in revenue companies, which again is rarefied air. With the 17 million businesses in the United States, only 200,000 have revenue of greater than $10 million. And so it's a very, very short pyramid. But there are a lot of those companies in Utah. It's a great entrepreneurial environment.
And on that topic, it is rarefied air. People spend their lives building their businesses. What are one or two main mistakes that you see these owners make when it comes time to finally capitalize on all their hard work?
Well, we've noticed that a lot of our clients, when they're running their business, they underspend on accounting and they underspend on legal, mostly accounting. And that can be a problem. They do the minimum to file their taxes. Oftentimes they are so good at running their business, they're not running it the way a larger company would, really looking at the financials and managing the business from the financials. So they don't really see the value in the financials. They see it as it's a box they have to check to file their taxes and then maybe meet reporting requirements with their lender. But it takes center stage. Accounting takes center stage in the sale of the business. And we counsel people all the time, you need to spend more money on accounting. You need to be able to produce the following reports. It is a grueling process, especially for business owners where there is one owner and there is no debt. That's the most terrifying situation for a broker / banker because that person has not been battle tested. They have not had the questions thrown at them that buyers will.
Craig, talk a little bit about how you as a business market your services. How do you find customers? How do customers find you?
You know, it's not going to be a very satisfying answer. I wish I knew how to recreate it. If I went back and I looked at the deals I've closed and I said, well, how did I get that client? There's nothing that would provide no information about how to find the next one. Really, it's about managing our reputation in the market. And I do that. We do that by having a group of professionals that I trust that send me leads. And I so value those relationships, and I'm doing all that I can to help their clients, which are my prospects, go through this process and make a decision. And really, more often than not, I'm talking them out of it, which adds a lot of credibility to what I do because there's the most credible conversations I have are ones in which I have no opportunity to make any money. So I am spending a lot of time meeting with people. I probably have 200 deal conversations a year. And so it's a long game. It's a strategy that builds equity in the marketplace, but doesn't result in my next deal in the next 2 weeks. That's for sure.
Excellent. Well, thank you for what you do. It is Utah, I think, is a place where it's nice because we can do well by doing good for other people, and that's a great example of that. Our guest this morning has been Craig Primo. He's the managing director of Keystone Capital Markets. He helps people, business owners that are thinking about selling their companies. Thank you for listening to Mountain Money. Please leave a review on your podcast app. It would be helpful for us.